Chapter 15. The Manifold Grace of God. Someone has quaintly said in the commencing upon the 23rd Psalm that the coach which the Lord's saints ride, not only a driver, but two footmen, quote, goodness and mercy shall follow me, close quote. Surely these two footmen of the Lord and their celestial livery of grace followed George Mueller all the days of his life. Wonderful as the story of the building of these five orphan houses on Ashley Down, many other events and experiences no less shadow the goodness and mercy of God and must not be unrecorded in these pages. If we are to trace, however, imperfectly his graciousness dealings and having but one comprehensive view taken in the story of the orphan homes, we may retrace our steps to the years when the first of these houses was planned, and following another path, look at George Mueller's personal and domestic life. He himself loved to trace the Lord's goodness and mercy. He saw abundant proofs that he had followed him. A few instances may be given from different departments of experience as representative examples. The Lord's tender care was manifest as to his beloved daughter, Lydia. It became clear in the year 1843 that both for the relief of the mother and the profit of the daughter, it would be better that Lydia should be taught elsewhere than at home. And in answer to prayer, her father was divinely directed to a Christian sister, whose special gifts in the way of instructing and training children were manifested from the Spirit, who divides all unto all believers, severally, as he will. She seemed to be marked of God as the woman to whom was entrusted the responsible task of superintending the education of Lydia. Mr. Mueller both expected and desired to pay for such training, and asked for the account, which in the first instance he paid, but the exact sum was returned to him anonymously, and for the six remaining years of his daughter's stay, he could get no further bills for her schooling. Thus God provided for the board and education of his only child, not only without cost to her parents, but to their intense satisfaction as being under the true nurture and admonition of the Lord. For while at this school, in April 1846, Lydia found peace in believing and began that beautiful life in the Lord Jesus Christ, that for 44 years afterwards so singularly exhibited his image. Many Christian parents have made the fatal mistake of intruding their children's education to those whose gifts were wholly intellectual and not spiritual, and who have misled the young pupils entrusted to their cares into irreligious or infidel life, or at best a career of mere intellectualism and worldly ambition. In not a few instances, all the influences of a pious home have been counteracted by the atmosphere of a school which, not godless, has been without the fragrance of spiritual devoutness and consecration which is indispensable to the true training of impressive children during the plastic years which the character is forming of for eternity. Goodness and mercy follow Mr. Mueller and Mrs. Mueller conspicuously in the sojourn in Germany in 1845, which covered about 3 months from July 19th to October 11th. God plainly led to Stuttgart, where brethren had fallen into grievous errors and needed again a helpful hand. With a strong impression laid upon Mr. Mueller more than 2 months before his departure for the continent, that he was to return there for a season, he began definitely to pray for the means to go with. On May 3rd, within a quarter hour after, £500 were received. The donor specified the money was given for all expenses needful, preparation to and attendance upon this proposed journey. The same goodness and mercy followed all his steps while abroad. Provision was made, and in God's own strange way, for suitable lodgings in Stuttgart, at a time when the city was expected crowded, a wealthy retired surgeon, who had never before rented apartments, being led to offer them. All Mr. Mueller's labors were attended with blessing, During part of this time, he held as many as 8 meetings a week, and was enabled to publish 11 tracts in German, and judiciously scattered over 220,000 of them, as well as nearly 4,000 of his narrative, and yet evade interference from the police. One experience of this sojourn abroad should have special mention for the lesson it suggests, both in the charity for others' views and the loving adaptation to circumstances. A providential opening occurred to the address meetings of about 150 members of the state church. In his view, the character of such assemblies was not wholly conformed to the scriptural pattern, and hence did not altogether meet his approval. But such opportunity was afforded to bear testimony for the truth's sake, and to exhibit Christian unity upon essentials, for love's sake, that he judged it of the Lord that he should enter out this open door. Those who knew Mr. Mueller but little, but knew his positive convictions and uncompromising loyalty to them, might suspect that he would have little forbearance with even minor errors, and would not bend himself from a stern attitude and inflexibility to accommodating himself to those who were snared by them. But those who knew him better saw that he had held fast from the form of sound words with faith and love which are in Christ Jesus. Like Paul, ever ready to be made all things to all men, that by all means he might save some, his whole character and conduct nothing shone more radiantly beautiful than love. He felt that he who would lift up others must bow himself to lay hold on them, that to help brethren we must bear with them, not insisting upon matters of minor importance as though they were essential and fundamental. Hence his course, instead of being needlessly repellent, was tenderly conciliatory, and it was a conspicuous sign of grace, while holding to his own views of truth and duty so positive and tenaciously, the intolerance of bigotry was so displaced by the forbearance of charity, that when the Lord was so led and circumstances so required, he could conform for a time to customs whose propriety he doubted, without abating either the earnestness of his conviction or the integrity of his testimony. God's goodness and mercy were seen in the fact that whenever more liberal things were devised for him, he responded in providing liberal means to carry out such desires. This was abundantly illustrated not only in the orphan work, but in the history of the Scripture Knowledge Institution, when for years together the various branches of the work grew so rapidly till the full point of full development was reached. The time indeed came when in some departments it pleased God that contraction should successfully expansion. But even here goodness ruled, for it was afterward seen that it was because other brethren had been led to take up such branches of the Lord's work, in all of which developments Mr. Mueller was as truly rejoiced as though it had been his work alone that was honored of God. The aiding of brethren in the mission fields grew more and more dear to his heart. The means to indulge his unselfish desires were so multiplied that in 1846 he found, on reviewing the history of the Lord's dealings, he had been able to expand about 7 times as much of the late years as previously. It may be added again, by way of anticipation, that when 19 years later, in 1865, he sat down to apportion such labors in the Lord as was wont to exist, the sums he felt it desirable to send to each, he found before him the names of 122 such. Goodness and mercy indeed. Here was but one branch of his work, and yet to what proportion and fullness it was grown. He needed 466 pounds to send them to fill out his apportions, and he lacked 92 of this amount. He carried the lack to the Lord, and that evening received 5 pounds, and the next morning 100 more, and further birthday memorial of 50, so that he had in all 37 more he had asked. What the Lord goodness and mercy followed him in the strength he had had to bear the heavy loads of care incident to his work. The Lord's coach bore him and his burdens together. Day by day, his gracious master preserved his peace unbroken. Through disease, found its way into this large family. Though fit homes and work must be found for outgoing orphans, and fit care and training for incoming orphans, through crises consciously arising and new needs constantly reoccurring, grave matters daily demanded prayer and watching, and perpetual diligence and vigilance were needful. For the Lord was his helper and carried all of his loads. During the winter of 1846-7, there was a peculiar season of dearth. Would God's goodness and mercy fail? There were those who looked on, more than half incredulously, saying to themselves, if not to others, I wonder how it is now with Mr. Mueller and his orphans, if he is able to provide for them now as he has been. We will say nothing. But all through this time of widespread want, his witness was, quote, we lack nothing. God helps us, close quote. Faith led when the way was too dark for sight. In fact, the darker the road, the more was the hand of felt that leads the blind by a way they know not. They went through what winter as easily as though any other from the beginning of the work. Was no sign that God's footmen followed George Mueller that the work never ceased to be both a work of faith and a prayer, that no difficulties or discouragements, no successes or triumphs ever caused for an hour departure from the sublime essential principles on which the work was based, or diversion from the purpose for which it had been built up? We have heard it said of a brother, much honored of God, in the beginning, a work of faith, that when it had grown to a greater proportion, he seemed to change its base to that of a business scheme. How it glorifies God that the holy enterprise, planted in Bristol in 1834, has known no such alteration in its essential features during all those years, though the work grew, and its needs with it, until the expenses were twofold, threefold, and fourfold, and at last sevenfold what they were being when the first orphan house was opened in Wilson Street. There has been no change of base, never any looking for man for patronage or support, never independence upon a regular income or fixed endowment. God has been, all through these years, as first, the sole patron and dependence. The Scriptural Knowledge Institution has not been wrecked on the rocks of financial failure, nor has it been drifted away from its original moorings in the safe anchorage ground of the promise of Jehovah. Was it not goodness and mercy that kept George Mueller ever grateful as well as faithful? He did not more constantly feel his need of faith and prayer than his duty and privilege of abounding of joy and praise. Some might think that after such experiences of answered prayer, one would be less and less moved by them, as the novelty was lost in the uniformity of such interpositions. But no. When in June 1853, at a time of sore need, the Lord sent, in one sum, £300, he could scarcely contain his triumph, joy in God. He walked up and down his room for a long time, his heart overflowing, and his eyes too, his mouth filled with laughter, and his voice with song, while he gave himself afresh to the faithful master he served. God blessed things were to him always new and fresh. Answered prayers never lost the charm of novelty, like flowers plucked fresh every hour from the gardens of God. They never got stale, losing none of their beauty or celestial fragrance. And what goodness and mercy was, never suffered prayerfulness and patience to relax their hold, either when answers seemed to come fast and thick like snowflakes, or when the heavens seemed to lock up and faith had to wait patiently and long. Every day brought new demands for continuance in prayer. In fact, Mr. Muir testifies that the only difference between later and former days was that the difficulties were greater in the proportion as to the work was larger. As he adds that this was to be expected, for the Lord gives faith for very purpose of trying it, for the glory of his name and the good of him who has the faith. And it is by these very trials that trust learns the secret of its triumphs. Goodness and mercy may not only guide, but also guard the servant of God. God's footmen bore a protective shield which was always over him. Amid thousands of unseen perils and occasionally some of the dangers were known, though generally, after it passed, while at Kinswick, laboring in 1847, for example, a man taken deranged while lodging in the same house shot himself. It was afterward transpired that he had impression that Mr. Mueller had designs on his life, and he had met Mr. Mueller during this insane attack, he would probably have shot him with the loaded pistol he carried about on his person. The pathway of the man of God sometimes led through deep waters of affliction, but goodness and mercy still followed, and had held him up. In the autumn of 1852, his beloved brother-in-law, Mr. A.N. Groves, came back from the East Indies very ill. In May of the next year, after the blessed witness for God, he fell asleep at Mr. Mueller's house. To him, Mr. Mueller owed much through grace in the outset of his labors in 1829. With his example, his faith had been stimulated to help him when no visible support or connection with any missionary society. Mr. Groves supports or connection with any missionary society. Mr. Groves had gone to Baghdad with his wife and children for the sake of mission work in this far-off field, resigning with a lucrative practice of about £1,500 a year. The tie between these two men was very close and tender, with the loss of the brother-in-law gave keen sorrow. In July following, Mr. and Mrs. Mueller went through a yet severe trial. Lydia, the beloved daughter and only child, born in 1832 and newborn in 1846, and at this time 20 years old, a treasure without price, was taken ill in the later part of June, and the ailment developed into a malignant typhoid, which 2 weeks later brought her to the gates of death. These parents had to face the prospect of being left childless. But faith triumphed and prayer prevailed. The darling Lydia was spared to be, for many years to come, a blessing beyond words, not only to them and to their future husband, but to many others in a wider circle of influence. Mr. Mueller found in this trial a special proof of God's goodness and mercy, which he gratefully records in the growth in grace, evidence of the entire and joyful acquaintance in the Father's will. When, in such loss apparently before him, his confidence was undisturbed, that all things would together work for good. He could not but contrast with this the experience of serenity, that broken peace and complaining spirit which he had met in a like trial in August 1831, 21 years before. How like a magnet among steel filings, the thankful heart finds the mercies and picks them out of the black dust of sorrow and sufferings. The second volume of Mr. Mueller's narrative closes with a paragraph in which he formally disclaims as imprudent, presumption, and pretension all high rank as a miracle worker, and records his regret that any work based on scriptural promises and built on the simple lines of faith and prayer should be accounted either phenomenal or fanatical. The common ways of accounting for its success would be absurdly ridiculous, amusing, were they not so sadly unbelieving. Those who knew little or nothing, either of the exercise of faith or the experience of God's faithfulness, resorted to the most God-dishonoring explanations of the work. Some said, quote, Mr. Mueller is a foreigner. His methods are so novel to attract attention, close quote. Others that, quote, the annual reports brought in the money, close quote. or suggested that, quote, a secret treasure, close quote. His quiet reply was that his being a foreigner would be more likely to repel than to attract confidence, that the novelty would scarcely avail him more than a score of years, that the other institutions which issued reports didn't always escape want and debt. But as to the secret treasure to which he was supposed to have access, he felt constrained to confess that there was more to that supposition than the objectors were aware of. He indeed had a treasure inexhaustible, and the promises of God unchangeable, faithful, from which he admits he had already in 1856 drawn for 22 years and over £113,000. As to reports, it may be worthwhile to notice that he never but once in his life advertised the public of any need, and that was the need of more orphans, more to care for in the name of the Lord. A single and singular case of advertising by which he had sought not to increase the income but his expenditure, not asking the public to aid him supporting the needy but to increase the occasion of his outlay. So far was he from depending upon any such source of supply from the unbelieving world might think, that it was in this drying up of all such channels that he found the opportunity of his faith and of his God's power. The visible treasure was often so small that it was reduced to nothing, but the invisible treasures was God's riches and glory, and could be drawn from without limit. This was to which he looked alone, in which he felt that he had a river supply that can never run dry. Appendix H. The orphan work had to Mr. Mueller many charms which grew on him as he entered more fully into it. While his main hope was to be the spiritual means health to these children, he had the joy of how God used these homes for the promotion of their physical welfare also. In a few cases, not a few, for the entire renovation of their weak and diseased bodies. It must be remembered that most of us owe their orphan condition to the great destroyer, consumption. Children were often brought to the orphan house through the permanent and the poison of bad blood, with diseases tendencies, sometimes emaciated, half-starved, having neither proper food nor medical care. For example, in the spring of 1855, four children from 5 to 9 years old and of one family who were admitted to the orphanage, all in a deplorable state from lack of both nursing and nutrition, it was a serious question whether they should be administered at all, as such tend to turn the institution to a hospital and absorb undue care and time. But to dismiss them seemed almost inhuman, certainly inhumane. So trusting in God, they were taken in and cared for with parallel love. A few weeks later, these children were physically unrecognizable, so rapid had been the improvement in health, probably there with God's blessing, four graves left to be dug. The trials incident to the moral and spiritual condition of the orphans were even greater, however, than those caused by the ill health and weakness. When children proved incurably bad, they were expelled, lest they should corrupt the others. For institution was not a reformatory, as it was not a hospital. In 1849, a boy of less than 8 years had been sent away as a confirmed liar and thief, having twice run off with the belongings of other children, and gloried in the juvenile crimes. Yet the forbearance exercised, even in this case, was marvelously godlike, for during over 5 years he had been the subject of private admonition and prayers and other methods of reclamation. When expulsion became the last result, he was solemnly and with prayer before all others sent away from the orphan house, that if possible such a course might prove a double blessing, a remedy to him and a warning to others, and even to this young practiced sinner was followed in expulsion by loving supplication. Toward the end of November 1857, it was found that a serious leak in the boiler of heating apparatus number 1 would make repairs once necessary, and the boilers were encased in bricks, and a new boiler might require such repairs must consume time. Meanwhile, how could 300 children, some of them very young and tender, be kept warm? Even if gas stoves could temporarily be set up, chimneys would be needful to carry off the impure air, and no way of heating was available during repairs, even if 100 pounds were expended to prevent risk of cold. Again, Mr. Mueller turned to the living God and trusted him, deciding to have the repairs begun. A day or so before the fires had begun, a bleak north wind set in. The work could no longer be delayed, yet weather prematurely cold for the season threatened these hundreds of children with heartful exposure. The Lord was boldly appealed to. Lord, these are thy orphans. Be pleased to change this north wind into a south wind, and to give workmen a mind to work, the job may speedily be done. The evening before the repairs actually began, the cold blast was still blowing. On that day, a south wind blew, and the weather was so mild that no fire was needful. Not only so, but as Mr. Mueller went to the cellar with the overseer of the work to see whether the repairs could in any way be expedited, he heard him say in the hearing of the men, quote, "They will work late this evening and come very early again tomorrow." Quote, "We would rather, sir," was the reply, "work all night." And so, with about 30 hours, the fire was again burning to heat the water in the boiler, until the apparatus was again in order, that mercifully soft wind had continued to blow. Goodness and mercy were following the Lord's humble servant, made the more conspicuous by crisis of special trial and trouble. Every new exigency provoked new prayer and invoked new faith. Then, in 1862, several boys were ready to be apprenticed, and they were no application such as were desired. Prayer was the one result, as advertising would tend to bring applicants from masters who sought apprentices for the sake of the premium. But every one of the 18 boys were properly bound over a Christian master, whose business was suitable and who would receive the lad in his own family. About the same time, one of the drains was obstructed, which runs about 11 feet underground. Then 3 holes had been dug, and as many places the drain tapped in vain. Prayer was offered that the 4th case workman might be guided to the very spot where the stoppage existed, and the quest was literally answered. 3 instances of marked deliverance and the answer to prayer are specially recorded for the year between May 26, 1864, and the same date of 1865, which should not be passed without at least a mention. First, in the great drought of the summer of 1864, when the 15 large cisterns and the 3 orphans were empty, and the 9 deep wells, even the good springs, which had never before failed, were almost all dry. 2,000 or 3,000 gallons of water were daily required, and daily prayer was made to the God of the rain. See how God provided. While pleased to withhold the supply from above, a farmer nearby supplied from his large wells about half the water needful, the rest being furnished by the half-exhausted wells in Ashley Down. And when he could no longer spare water without a day's interval, another farmer offered a supply from a brook which ran through his fields, and thus there were abundance until the rains replenished cisterns and wells. About 20 years later, the Bristol Water Works Company introduced pipes, and thus a permanent and unfailing supply. Second, when for 3 years a scarlet and typhus fever and smallpox being prevalent in Bristol and the vicinity threatened the orphans, prayer was again made to him who has a God of health and as well of rain. There was no case of scarlet or typhus fever during the whole time through smallpox was permitted to find an entrance into the smallest of the orphan houses. Prayer was only still the one resort. Disease spread to the other houses until 1/15 were ill with it. The cases, however, were mercifully light. The Lord besought to allow the epidemic to spread no further. Not another child was taken, and when, after 9 months, disease altogether disappeared, not one child had died of it, and only one teacher adult had an attack, and that it was very mild. What ravages disease might have had made among the 1,200 inmates of these orphan houses had it prevailed later, in 1872. Third, tremendous gales pervisited Bristol and neighborhood in January 1865. The roofs of the orphan houses were so injured as to be laid open in at least 20 places, and large panes of glass were broken. The day was Saturday, and no glazier and slater could be before Monday, so the Lord of the wind and weather was besought to protect the exposed property during the interval. The winds calmed down, and the rain was restrained until midday Wednesday, when the pairs were about finished, but heavy rainfalls drove the slaters from the roof. One exposed opening remains and much damage threatened, but in answer to prayer, the rain was stayed and the work resumed. No damage had been done while the last opening was unrepaired, for it had been exposed to the building from the south, while the rain came from the north. Mr. Muir records these circumstances with his usual particularity as part of the witness to the living God, and to the goodness and mercy that closely continually followed him. During the next year, 1865, Scarlet fever broke out in the orphanage, and all 39 were ill, but whooping cough also made its appearance. But during that season, it was not very prevalent, but very malignant in Bristol. In all the orphanage, there were about 17 cases, and only the fatal ones was that of a little girl constitutionally weak lungs. During the same year, however, the Spirit of God wrought mightily among the girls, as in previous year among the boys, so that over 100 became deeply, earnestly seekers after salvation. And so, even in tribulation, consolation abounded in Christ. Mr. Mueller and his wife helpers now implored God to deepen and broaden this work of his Spirit. Toward the end of the year closing, in May 1866, Emma Bunn, an orphan girl of 17, was struck with consumption. Though for 14 years she had been under Mr. Mueller's care, she was in this dangerous illness still careless and indifferent, and she drew near to death. Her case continued as hopeless as ever. Prayer was unceasing for her, and it pleased God suddenly to reveal Christ to her in salvation. Great self-loathing now at once took the place of former indifference, confession of sins, of previous callousness of conscience, an unspeakable joy in the Lord, a former apathy and coldness. It was a spiritual miracle, this girl's sudden transformation to a witness for God, manifestation, deepest conviction for past sin, and earnest concern for others. Her thoughtlessness and heedless state had now so well known that her conversion and dying message were now the Lord's means of the most extensive and God-glorifying work ever wrought up to that time among the orphans. In one house alone, 350 were led to seek peace in believing. What lessons lie hidden, nay, lie in the very surface, to be read of every willing observer of these events? Prayer can break even the hard-hearted. A memory, a stored with biblical truth and pious teaching, with proof, when once God's grace softens the heart and loosed the tongue, a source of both personal growth and grace and capacity for wide service to others. We are all practically too querulous of the training of children, and too distrustful of our young converts. Mr. Mueller was more impressed by the triumphs of God's grace as seen in children, converted at the tender age of 9 and 10, and holding the beginning of their confidence steadfast unto the end. These facts and experiences gleaned like handfuls of grain from a wide field show the character both of the seed sown and the harvest reaped from the sowing. Again, in 1866, Corolla developed in England an answer to special prayer. Not one case of this disease was known in the orphan houses. And when an autumn whooping cough and measles broke out, though 8 children had the former and 262 the latter, not one child died or was afterward debilitated by the attack. From May 1866 to May 1867, out of 1,300 children under care, only 11 died, considerably less than 1%. That severe epidemic disease should find its way into the orphanage at all may seem strange to those who judge God's faithfulness by appearances. But many were the compensations for such trials. By them, not only were the hearts of their children often turned to God, but the hearts of the helpers and the institutions were made more sympathetic and tender, and the hearts of God's people at large were stirred up to practical and systematic help. God uses such seamless calamities as advertisements of His work, and many who would have not heard of the institution or in whom they did not hear would have made little impression, were led to take deep interest in orphanages where thousands of little ones were exposed to the ravages of some of the malignant and dangerous epidemic. Looking back, in 1865, after 31 years upon the work thus far done for the Lord, Mr. Mueller gratefully records that during the entire time he had been able to hold fast the original principles on which the work was based. On March 5th, 1834, he had never once gone into debt. He had sought for the institution no patron but the living God, and he had kept to the line of demarcation between believers and unbelievers and always seeking for active helpers in the work. His grand purpose in all his labors having been from the beginning the glory of God and showing what could be done through prayer and faith without any leaning upon man, his unequivocal testimony is, quote, "Hitherto hath the Lord helped us." Though for 5 years they had almost daily been in the constant trial of faith, they were constantly proving his faithfulness. The work had rapidly grown till it assumed gigantic proportions, but so did the help of God keep pace with all the needs and demands of its growth. In January 1866, Mr. Henry Craik, who had for 36 years been Mr. Mueller's valued friend and since 1832 his co-worker in Bristol, fell asleep after illness of 7 months. In Devonshire, these two brothers had first known each other, and the acquaintance had subsequently ripened through years of common labor and trial into an affection seldom found among men. They were nearly of an age, both being a little past 60, when Mr. Craik died. The loss was too heavy to have been patiently and serenely borne, and it was not the survivor known and felt beneath him the everlasting alarms. And even this bereavement, which one aspect was an irreparable loss, was seen to be only another proof of God's love. The look ahead might be a dark one, the way desolate, even dangerous. But goodness and mercy were still following very close behind, and would in every new place of danger or difficulty be at hand to help over hard places and give comfort and cheer in night seasons.